This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
So we do have time for questions. Where are we going to start this time? Oh, go on. If you could just wait for the microphone. And there'll be one on the other side in 2 minutes.
Hi, Stacey Gale, Bournemouth University. I'd like to ask Amanda why you think modern universities are doing better at postgraduate taught.
Well, that was simply on the basis of proportion of provision. So it wasn't a quality issue. It was simply looking at the volumes and student numbers.
Yeah, but why?
Well, oh, sorry. I think they can focus much more on what employers want. I think they're more flexible. I think it's more in their sort of DNA. I think we. The older research intensive universities just tend to go always to this sort of default, you know, full-time model, largely focusing on the pre-experience, the young graduate market. I think they're just out there talking to employers as a natural part of their work, and that makes it easier for them.
Okay, we had two questions. Just the gentleman there, sorry, and then we'll move forward. Yeah.
James Elwin from Oxford Brookes University. Coming out of Amanda's talk and some of the facts that we had earlier, I can see some of the universities starting to think that we need to possibly have more flexible delivery, possibly even outsourcing to Europe and the Far East in terms of where our markets are going to be. And I'd be very interested to know from Jane how she would actually react to kind of joint provision, outsourced provision, where you would get a degree from possibly a British university in conjunction with another one. Mm-hmm. How is that going to work? Because I think there are enormous market opportunities to do that.
In 2 minutes.
In 2 minutes. Absolutely, I agree with you. And there aren't any quality assurance barriers in the structures that we have that would prevent institutions from having those collaborative arrangements. It was mentioned earlier on about joint awards and dual awards. Yes, I think there are some specific issues about joint awards and dual awards, and we're hoping that we can do some work with institutions on that in the coming year. I mentioned the amplification of Section 2 of the Code of Practice. That's the section that deals with collaborative arrangements. And while we're reviewing, revising the academic infrastructure, we try to put some more explanation into that revision of that section to address some of the concerns that we know institutions do have about potentially checking again the quality assurance arrangements of their partner organisations overseas particularly, which has perhaps led to duplication of quality assurance arrangements. It has perhaps led to what we've called in the past gold plating of the arrangements. The Quality Assurance Agency wants to make sure that we are supporting institutions and not putting barriers in the way. So if there are particular issues that you have identified, then we'd be more than happy to speak to you to see how our work in the future around those joint and dual awards can support what institutions want to do and not be barriers.
I think you might just add to that. I think a lot of the problems are perceived rather than real. And well, the other side
you.
Of it.
Thank you for you saying that, Howard.
I'm a firm believer in banging on the door of places and say, why can't I do that? And I would make the analogy there are Airbus 380s flying around with airworthiness certificates from virtually every country in the world, which are manufactured by parts from pretty much a lot of countries. Now, if QAA can't sort that out for education, having done it for the A380, then it's a poor do. And manufacturing is obviously far in advance of university quality assurance systems. I'd be banging on the door. But I would anyway. We had a question in front. If we could just take the colleague in front.
So I'm Jane Sherwood from the University of Oxford. I just wanted to ask a question for Amanda. It's just for information, really, about what information we do have on what employers worldwide need. Because when I reflect on the constituency of the graduate population at Oxford, 60% of our graduate students are from outside the UK. We have between 120 and 140 different nationalities represented. Yeah. So how do we get a grip on what, for us at least, is an extremely international employer marketplace?
I think that's an awful lot harder, actually. I think it probably entails linking up with employment consultants and experts in other countries. I know that at Exeter, they were setting up a China arrangement with a Chinese employment agency of some sort that would actually help find employment opportunities for their students. But I think perhaps for the sort of students you'd be recruiting at Oxford, I think the multinationals in the UK may well be the right people to talk to who would give you that global perspective. But I mean, I agree it would be incredibly challenging to do the sort of research that I was talking about. So I'm not talking so much about finding employment opportunities, but about actually talking to employers in specific sectors. And I think one other untapped source is actually our international alumni. Business schools are terribly good at this sort of thing. And I did some work on best practice and alumni relations in business schools, and there were some fantastic things going on that were real sort of win-wins in terms of keeping contact with alumni, but using the same events and networks that were developed for them, also to develop researcher and practitioner networks so that academics had a ready-made group of practitioners to tap into. Some of the events could then be offered to prospective students as taster courses, and you've got a really good sort of virtuous circle going there. So I think, and international alumni are very important, and we don't necessarily make good use of them.
If I could just add on to that, because there's a parallel, is understanding what the postgraduate market is in the countries which these students are coming from, to see what our competition is like over there. I mean, Malcolm was talking about the way in which the doctorate in the UK has got is established and how people from outside the UK view it. But do we know what do we know about the environment from which they're coming? I mean, for example, what do we know about the doctorates in Brazil and how easy to... What's the competitive market from that point of view as well? And these things can be researched. I mean, the doctorate one particularly is fairly easy to understand. And we tend to be a bit isolated in these things, don't we? Mm. Do we have one more question? We do. We've got time for one more question, so let's have the one more question.
Hello, Sarah Hainsworth from the University of Leicester. It's a question for Amanda. You talked an awful lot about postgraduate taught market. I wondered if you could expand some of that into postgraduate research students and how you feel we should maybe be adapting for the future in that area.
I think flexibility, potentially. I'll say up front, I'm not a PGR expert, but I think certainly some of the more generic points about designing provision around the students' needs and much more remote study as well could be the way forward.
Okay, so we'll close for the morning now. There'll be opportunities for questions later on. You'll probably think about them over lunch. You'll probably talk to colleagues and need to find out more about that. So we meet back at 2 o'clock. Lunch is, I think, in the room around the corner. So if you'd like to refresh yourselves and be back here a couple of minutes before 2, so we can keep to time, because I know trains may be tricky going home, so we will try and finish absolutely on time. Okay, thanks very much. Thank you.